Mornings and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Rescue teams are checking huge debris piles along the Guadalupe River looking for more than 170 people missing after deadly flooding in central Texas. CBS's Karen Juan.
While officials have not outright come out and declared this a recovery mission, the last known survivor was found 7 days ago.
A federal judge in New Hampshire issues an injunction against President Trump's executive order to end birthright citizenship and certifies a class action lawsuit. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
I think there is a good chance that this executive order never goes into effect because it's tied up in litigation.
The four members of SpaceX Crew's 11 mission are targeted to launch late this month or in early August. NASA astronaut Zena Cardman says they've been training since last September.
What that has meant for us is an incredible bond that is rooted in gratitude and resilience.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
Some time off for the Brew Crew. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers have the night off before they host the Nationals tomorrow night. The Brewers beat the Dodgers yesterday, 3-2 in 10 innings. Jackson Churio at the plate with Sal Frelick at third on FanDuel Wisconsin.
Churio, base hit! A winner out of the Brew Crew, sending the Dodgers to their sixth straight loss.
It's also the first time the Brewers have ever swept the Dodgers in a series played in Milwaukee. And after the game, it was announced that closer Trevor McGill has been selected for the All-Star game next week in Atlanta. NBA, Bobby Portis tells ESPN why he wanted to stay in Milwaukee and play for the Bucks.
Just the atmosphere, man, just the culture, man, just being in Milwaukee kind of helped shape and make my career.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I push through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. A new Pew Research survey finds that more than half of Canadians and a good majority of Mexicans view the U.S. as their country's top threat. 59% of Canadians, 68% of Mexicans view us as their biggest threat. And I got to tell you, there's part of me that wonders, if they took that poll here at home, how many Americans would go, yeah, Republicans with this big, beautiful nightmare bill? Yeah, them. Yeah, they're our biggest threat. Because here again, we're in another situation where every time you hear a politician in Washington talk about tightening the belt, it's always the poor and the working class who get strangled. They like to call it fiscal responsibility, but what it really means, just another round of pain for you and me, for people who are already struggling to make ends meet and who have nothing left to give. Look at what's going on right now. Trump and the GOP with their one big, beautiful bill, a 1,000-page monstrosity that they just got rammed through. What's the first thing they go after? Medicaid. Not the yacht tax cuts, not the loopholes that billionaires use, not the corporate subsidies. No. Medicaid, food assistance, the basic safety net that millions of us rely on. Question is, how many times have we heard the same tired lies? This is going to make America stronger. It's going to make us safer. We're going to fix the system. And you go, for who? not the 70 million of us who count on Medicaid to get their kids healthy, their parents cared for, or themselves to stay alive. And certainly not for the people in rural Nebraska, where a hospital is already closing their doors because of the anticipated federal budget cuts to Medicaid. The community hospital in McCook, Nebraska, closing down, closing its Curtis Medical Center. And look, there are, what, about six more that could be next? Look, this isn't belt tightening. No, no. This is a noose around the neck of every small town and working family in this country, and they know it. And don't let them tell you it's about waste, fraud, and abuse. That's just another smokescreen for redistributing wealth from your pocket to theirs, like always. Now, you got the Congressional Budget Office. It's, what, 12 million people are going to lose their health coverage because of the Medicaid cuts? That's 12 million lives upended. Why? So the super rich can get another round of tax breaks. Corporations can keep pocketing record profits. And politicians can, you know, they can go on about how they're shrinking government. All the while they're handing out goodies to their donors. It's the same story every time. Every so-called reform, whether it's deregulation schemes that let polluters poison our air and water, it's the privatization schemes that rip off our public goods and turn them into profit machines for Wall Street, tax cuts that, well, they were never going to trickle down, but always seem to find their way upward. And now this monstrosity of a nightmare bill. Slashing Medicaid, gutting food assistance, making life harder for you, me, anyone who isn't already filthy rich. And they say the system isn't getting closed. We're not making cuts. We're making it more efficient. No, in fact, we're doing more. Yeah, tell that to the people whose hospital's closing. Tell that to the people whose doctors and nurses and folks are going away, the last shred of their community dignity. Tell that to them there. And meanwhile, you got politicians who voted for this mess, like Nebraska's own Mike Flood. Yeah, you know, hey, decisions have to be made, you know, he said. As if this is some just abstract math problem and not a matter of life and death for thousands of his constituents. Understand, 44% of Nebraska's rural hospitals are already losing money. And this bill is going to rip away about $3.6 billion out of that state's health system over the next decade. What that means, higher premiums for everybody, fewer services for everybody, and oh, by the way, those poor people left out in the cold to, well, die. And understand, this isn't just bad policy. This is a deliberate assault on the working class. Every time there's a crisis, the answer is make us pay for it. When the banks crash the economy, we lose our jobs and homes. When the rich want another tax cut, well, we're going to take that health care away. And when the politicians want to look tough, what do? They kick the poor, they kick the sick, the downtrodden. Every time, never fails. And then they come around and say, well, we just got to tighten the belt a little, while they're loosening theirs and gorging themselves at the public trough. Look, I don't think we're stupid. At least I hope we're not. We see what's happening. This bill's a nightmare for anyone who works for a living, anyone who depends on public services, anyone who isn't already rich. It's time to stop pretending that these cuts are about anything other than making the rich richer. It's not about responsibility. It's not about reform. They're robbing the poor to pay the rich, plain and simple. That's the reality of it. And they can try and divide and conquer us all they want. The reality is the pain is going to be real. And what's interesting is some of the responses I'm getting from folks who wore the red hat, going, hey, wait a minute, that's my health care. Wait a minute, you're not supposed to come after me. And as I said on election day and have said 1,000 times since, our solutions, our collective solutions are going to come out of the suffering caused by their savagery. This bill is going to savage the working class of this country. The reality is out of this is going to come some anger. And the hope is that we organize around that and go, you know what? Healthcare should be a right. Every working person should have it. Every person should have it. There's no such thing as the deserving poor and the undeserving poor. There's poor people. Poor people need help. Working people need help. So for me, I see opportunity here. I see opportunity like none other. Will we take it? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back with Phil Glover from the AFGE.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Tuesday, we talked about how the VA wasn't going to fire 80,000 VA employees. They were only going to fire 30,000. And again, as I said, you know, this again is how Republicans negotiate. They'll come to you and go, "We want both your legs." And Democrats go, no, we need both our legs. And then they agree, well, you could take one up to the knee. And then a couple months later, Republicans come back and go, "Hey, we really want both legs." And Democrats go, "Okay, you could take, you know, the rest of the one leg, but we need one." And a little bit later, they come back and to eventually, they're going to get there anyway. It's just a slow incremental bleed to where eventually they get where they want. And here, this, I fully expect 80,000, probably 90 to go at some point down the road. But right now, they're only taking 30. And then on Wednesday, you got the Supreme Court's going, yeah, let the administration do whatever they want. Fire at will. That union contract be damned. And here to share some thoughts on, well, that union contract and the workers who work for our federal government. I've asked my good friend Phil Glover to come share some thoughts. Phil is the District 3 National Vice President of AFGE. You can check out their website, afge.org. Phil, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate you having us on.
So let's start with this this VA thing. Let's start with the do you believe the VA when they say they're only going to go after 30,000 through attrition instead of the mass layoffs? Do you buy that?
I think for now that Secretary Collins felt the pressure from Senate and House and has tried to modify what his plan was, although I don't necessarily trust that it won't go forward in various ways, in other ways. Like, it won't be this massive, here's a notice, we're getting rid of 80,000. I think it will be, over time, they will chop apart different parts of the agency. And I think most of it is to contract it out. I think that's what they want to do.
Oh, no, obviously, the privatization is strong with this crowd. But, you know, even at 30,000 and what they're saying is through attrition, how do you think this will affect the folks who are left? Do they see this as people being pushed out, that eventually they were going to fire 30,000 anyway? Is it going to affect care? I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, when you get into this by attrition concept, by attrition makes little sense, because if three people in a unit, let's say, you know, retire or leave government, go work for the private sector, and you're not going to replace them, and let's say there were nine in that unit, let's say it's a scheduling unit, or let's say it's the transportation group that moves veterans around to their appointments. So three of them retire. Oh, by attrition, we're not going to bring those three back. So how does that affect veterans? It affects veterans. All of this does. It doesn't, you can use pretty words and act like you're not really harming veterans care, but they are harming veterans care.
So when you look at this and you go, you know, they're going to, all these 30,000 are going to be gone, and we've got a hiring freeze. Oh, by the way, And now this, obviously, the early retirements and all that, the shrink the workforce. You're talking about the people who are going to be left are going to be working more, longer, harder, and for any more? I mean, are we talking about rewarding the people who stay in any way?
No, I don't think that's the plan. There's been no, bonuses offered to employees that are there. They're cutting employee benefits as much as they can. The House and Senate just went through that machination with the reconciliation bill, trying to chop into federal employees to the tune of $50 billion. So I don't think that's stopped. I just think they'll try it a different way. They'll try it through the Office of Personnel Management. They'll do it through the agencies. But in this case, I think they believe that all the staff aren't needed, even though, again, we've put on about 1 million veterans since 2022 into the system.
Right.
And
right.
So, he continuously wants to go back to this prior to 22 staffing number. This is Collins. Maybe he just blanks out on what's happened with the PAC Act and other things in the VA. I don't know. But, it's unbelievable.
Well, it seems to me, and again, we've talked about this before, that the ultimate goal in this is the shrink, the Grover Norquist. We're gonna shrink it so small that we can drag it in the bathtub and drown it, with the inevitable goal and the ultimate goal of privatizing what is the only universal healthcare system in our country. This is the kind of stuff they complain about in other countries, and yet they're doing all of the horrible things, or trying to do all of the horrible things that they think other countries do to their citizens. It's a weird kind of self-fulfilling prophecy, in my view.
Yeah, the VA generally, if you look at the veteran service organizations, they do ratings on the VA. There are all kinds of surveys each year about VA care. 60 to 70% of veterans want their care at the VA, appreciate their care at the VA, think their care is very good at the VA. Now, you always have your, 30-40% that don't, but it's higher than any private sector care system in the United States as far as customer satisfaction. And again, why do you come in and want to dismantle in any way a care system that has that type of approval? You want to make it better, I would say, but I don't understand their idea is get rid of 30,000 people. It makes the care better. You can keep claiming, and this is what he keeps doing. He keeps getting in hearings. Well, we're not cutting any doctors and nurses. We're not going to cut those. Well, that's great. But the nurse needs, they need medical assistance. You need paralegals at the VA to handle paperwork. You need secretaries. You need schedulers. You need counselors. All of these things you still need.
No, and you need people who are going to need people to empty the wastebasket. You need people to clean the place.
You need those people.
You desperately need those people. And I would argue they're almost as they're probably more important than the doctors and the nurses, yeah. Because without them, infection rates go through the roof. All kinds of horrible happens. And yet, yeah. As you point out, we're not cutting doctors or nurses. No, we're just going to screw everybody else.
Yeah, the doctors and nurses need support, and they get worn out. I mean, those nurses, I talk to nurses at the VA in Altoona. I go to the VA in Altoona and Pennsylvania. And, they wear out with these hiring freezes and some of this other stuff. And even if they lift the hiring freeze at a VA, it takes forever to get these people on board. And don't think that it's not competitive with the private sector to get nurses.
Right.
It is. Traveling nurses were making $90, $100 an hour. And so... you're going to offer them a VA position, a GS, 9, 11, 60,000 a year, 70, when you can make $100,000 a year as a traveling nurse. It's tough.
No, and that's one of the healthcare situation that I'm going through with my wife. The one thing that has really jumped out at me is the number of travel nurses that are staffing our hospitals and our care system. It's incredible to me. And again, it comes back to my belief that they're using these travel nurses to ensure that nurses don't unionize and raise the wages and the healthcare benefits and all that stuff. And you know, obviously the staffing levels and all the stuff to go with it. It's another one of those union busting tactics, in my view.
I think that's absolutely true. And until the public wakes up to this and what is happening, you know, we saw, I think we saw a lot of that in this Medicare, Medicaid debate. And we saw a lot of people on the streets, which, you know, I was really proud to be part of some of those rallies across the state of Pennsylvania. And I think the VA is the same way. The veterans started to feel that they were going to get cut. And I do think that forced Secretary Collins to back off a little bit when they have the VFW sitting in a hearing, saying the commander saying, we're not going to accept this. And, you know, now you see the veterans starting to activate. And even the ones that are, you know, let's say Trump supporters, they don't want to see their care cut. They don't want to see their benefits cut, their disability cut. You know, that becomes personal.
Yeah, and absolutely.
So, you know, we'll see.
I mean, the question then becomes is, you know, how are you going to use what we know is coming? I mean, we've just seen in Nebraska the first rural hospital closing specifically because they're anticipating their Medicaid funding to just dry up. What happens when we start closing VA hospitals?
Well, and that's the thing. Let's say in their perfect world, it's let's privatize the VA. So let's say across Pennsylvania, you've got 8 or 9 big VA hospitals across the state, and you start shutting those down at the same time that Medicaid is not paying the same amounts to rural hospitals, and then those hospitals start to shut down, or, you know, care centers. And so it's a domino effect. And I don't know who thinks that's a good idea, especially with an aging population. I mean, I'm sorry, but we are all...
I'm not getting any younger.
we're not 20 anymore.
And as I've been saying, look, I've got really great health care. I've got great health insurance. My union does an incredible job of negotiating the best health insurance I can possibly have. If my rural hospital closes down, what good is having great insurance if you got nowhere to go?
Won't matter if you have to transport to Philadelphia or to some big supplier somewhere. It's not going to help you at all.
Nope, not even a little bit. Now, I got to get your thoughts on also, you know, clearly, you know, what's going on at the VA is catastrophic. You know, even the 30,000 cut is ridiculous considering we're thousands down anyway. But I got to look at what the Supreme Court recently did, and I want to get your thoughts on their recent decision to basically allow the Trump administration, you know, to have your members be at will, fired for no reason, mass large-scale layoffs. I got to get your thoughts.
Yeah, it's really frustrating, Rick. You know, we get these district circuit court judges who look at these things. They hold hearings. They ask for briefs. You give them those things. You show them what the harm would be. And then he runs through the Justice Department or the solicitor at the White House. He runs to the Supremes. And they say, nah, go ahead, do what you want to do, but the case can continue. Well, after you've destroyed, 17 federal agencies by massive layoffs and reorganizations, I don't know how you get that back. The stays are in place. The preliminary injunctions are in place to make sure that there's no harm to all of the people that get serviced by those agencies and the employees themselves. So that, you know, the case can get looked at legally and you are sure that he's following the law. That's not what's happening here. And this has happened multiple times. He's run up to the Supreme Court. They have then turned off the injunctions so that he can move forward. And it's almost ridiculous to the point that you almost expect it immediately. Why don't they just take every case? They should just start being the court of the nation. Take every case you want to take from the Trump administration, because they don't want to wait for the lower courts to act like they used to.
Right.
They don't want to, you know, they put everything on this shadow docket. And They allow it to go forward. And then they say, well, yeah, but we're not ruling on the merits. Well, it doesn't matter if you rule on the merits. You're allowing the disintegration of the workforce. Who's going to come back? You get rid of, like we were just talking about, let's say you do get rid of 80,000 VA employees. How are you getting them back? You're not. You know, in a year, let's say the court cases say, yeah, Article 1 of the Constitution says that Congress decides this. And the court has ruled that. All right. Now, how do you get it back? That's what I don't understand about what the Supremes are doing. They're jumping ahead of all the regular process of the courts to essentially allow this president to rule by fiat. And it's really scary. And I think the public needs to, even the ones that support him, would you want President Obama or Biden to have that kind of power? No, they would not. They would be screaming if the Supremes did that under either of those presidents.
Yeah, no, it's quite remarkable. So I guess the question I have for you, with this power, and they're going to wield it, they've already told us they're going to, as they go in and wholesale cut good portions of our government, how do you anticipate this impacting federal agencies and the ability to deliver the essential services that we need? Especially, again, you go back to the VA, how do you expect all this to play out for us?
I think, as what just happened with Collins, that wasn't a court decision. That was a public pressure decision. That was a congressional decision. Even when they went and did the appropriations bill for VA, they actually increased it from what the administration had asked for. The House version, which is a Republican House, Chairman Boast increased the VA. So I think there's going to be, they're coming into the 26 elections. I think individual members of Congress look out for individual members of Congress. And so those areas like Wilkes-Barre VA, that's where PA-8 is with Congressman Bresnahan. And we've been having a lot of discussions with him lately on many issues on the federal work side. We have Congressman Rushenthaler out in Pittsburgh, and he uses the Pittsburgh VA, according to him. So I'm hopeful that we can apply pressure on these points, that it's not just a legal solution, that it will become a pressure solution by the public.
No, and that was going to lead me into, what's the message for your members? What's the message for federal employees who now are looking at job insecurity that they've never seen before, at-will employment kind of scenarios? And ultimately, and this is, for me, the big part of this, the coming loyalty tests that they've already told us are coming. You got to know your favorite Trump executive order and be able to articulate how wonderful Dear Leader's executive orders are, or you don't get to keep your job.
Yeah, that's a pretty dystopian 1984 thing.
Is that not what's going on? Is that not what they've already told us?
Actually, it is going on, and that's it, even the rewriting of history part, the quick quill pen, whatever they called it, is happening right now. The president does it every day. He gets up on TV, and every day he changes the history of things. And people on his side of the aisle believe it, or whether they believe it or not, they're afraid to publicly say they don't believe it. If you look at even the last vote, the only thing that does give me some hope is the Senate had the ability to pass a number of federal employee changes, and even with only a 51 vote majority needed on that bill, they stripped out all of the federal stuff, except for an audit of our health care to see if dependents are being kept on the care longer than they should.
See, we can strip people off of it.
If we can get people off health care in this country, we're in a much better place. That's what I see.
Yeah, if we can get those people off desperate and exploitable, it'd be great. Last quick question I've got for you.
Get those 26-year-olds off the plan, Rick. Get them off the plan.
So last quick question.
We wouldn't want him to be on air till 27.
Last quick question I've got for you. What does this mean for the broader labor movement? I mean, I talked about this yesterday, an injury to one, an injury to all. Right now it's federal workers. Eventually this trickles down to the rest of us. What's the message from the broader movement?
Well, I think the broader movement has to decide if they're going to stand with all labor or with their individual interests for their union. We've talked about this a few times. There's some unions that are unaffected by Mr. Trump's activities. Are they going to stand with the ones that are affected and say enough's enough, or use their resource, their ability to talk to the administration or to the president himself and say, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're harming all of us in labor. You know, let's stop this. I haven't seen it yet. I hope it happens.
I hope so too. Phil, as always, I appreciate the time. Good stuff. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick. Take care.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you're a federal employee, I definitely want to hear from you. What are you feeling? What are you thinking? Especially if you voted for Trump. I want to hear that. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, warm, and muggy tonight and tomorrow with occasional showers and thunderstorms. Low tonight in the upper 60s, high tomorrow mid-80s. A storm or two still possible Saturday, then drying out for the weekend with a drop in humidity. It's 69 degrees right now.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
I get why you, Senator Royce, were a no vote on this budget. I think the people that voted no on this were standing up for public education.
I think that's exactly right. We heard from people loud and clear in this budget cycle and 2 years ago, the number one priority that people asked for, whether they called, emailed, or showed up at the public hearings, they want our schools funded. Our kids deserve better schools. They have been underfunded for decades, and it is time for us to prioritize public education.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So now that the big nightmare bill is going forward, question is, well, you know, how are Democrats going to use this? How's this going to play in New Jersey and Virginia, where you've got gubernatorial races coming up? You know, how's this going to work? What are Dems going to do? Because there's an opportunity here, major opportunity, because it's really unpopular and it's going to harm people. It's going to kill people, in my view. And here to share some thoughts on, well, let's start with what's going on in New Jersey and Virginia. I've asked Sam Newton to come talk with us. Sam is the communications director of the Democratic Governors Association. You can check out their website, democraticgovernor.org. Sam, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thanks for having me on.
So let's start with Virginia. What's this bill going to do? What are the folks in Virginia, Abigail Spanberger and the folks there, going to do to try and turn Virginia blue?
Thank you so much for asking that. And I agree with you. This bill is absolutely ridiculous. Donald Trump promised that he was going to lower costs for working people. He's done nothing but raise them. And this bill is going to make it worse. In Virginia, and I will say, we know this bill's and is going to get a lot of attention at the national level in the federal races for the House and the Senate in the midterms in 2026, which are very important races. But what sometimes goes under the radar is the 38 very important governor's races we have over the next 2 years, including Virginia and New Jersey, that are this year, this November. And those two races will be the first opportunity for Americans to reject this ridiculous bill and these cuts to Medicaid and SNAP at the ballot box. And in Virginia, where right now there is a Republican governor, we have an incredible opportunity to flip that seat. Former member of Congress, Congresswoman Abigail Spanberger, is an incredible nominee. We are very excited about her. She is a former federal law enforcement officer, a former CIA case officer. She was known as a very bipartisan member of Congress who actually got stuff done for the middle class, for working people, for veterans, for seniors. And now she's running on trying to protect jobs for working families and to lower the cost of healthcare, housing, and energy. And her opponent, Winsome Sears, is way too extreme. She supports this bill that will cut healthcare from over 320,000 people in Virginia, Rick. That's not just Medicaid. That takes into account the Affordable Care Act. And by the way, besides ripping healthcare away from all of those people who need it, when so many people are off the health insurance, that's going to raise costs for everyone else. So that's something that we're talking about this race every single day. Winsome Sears, she tried to dodge questions about it for weeks because she knows it's unpopular. She knows it's harmful. And then over the weekend, she said that the bill does a lot of great things and we're holding her accountable.
No, a lot of great things. You know, closing rural hospitals. We've already seen one close. Going to take, you know, health care from millions of people across the country. And the hope is that you guys and Democratic candidates up and down the ballot, they hang this around Republicans' necks because this is what they did. This is their record. They've got something to run on or run away from. And it's your guys' responsibility to keep bringing this up over and over again because this is bad stuff.
Yeah, and we're going to be hammering it every single day. And we're talking about, you know, going back to the Medicaid cuts. That's something we're going to be talking about, the cuts to SNAP. You mentioned rural hospitals. This is going to be a huge threat to rural hospitals, and it's going to kill jobs. And by the way, Virginia is already an economy that is hurting from what Donald Trump and Elon Musk have done with DOGE and these mass federal layoffs. I heard you just talking about them the other day, how harmful they are, just laying people off and taking away their jobs. Winsome Sears not only cheered this on, but then she mocked people who are concerned about losing their jobs, saying like, oh, the media is trying to make this out to be some kind of huge, huge thing. Why is it a big deal? I don't understand why. I don't have to tell this to you or to your audience, and it might sound simple. I think when someone loses their job, it is a big deal. It is a job is about respect. It Yep. is how you support your family. It is about how you pay your bills. It is your place in the community. It is your livelihood. And it is just so disrespectful that Winsome Sears supports these job cuts, these cuts to Medicaid, and then has mocked people.
It's incredible what we've seen. I used to just believe, you know, social media was the place where people were the worst versions of themselves. But now you've got people running for office going, yeah, I don't care. I don't care about my neighbor. I'm struggling with that. Let's move over to New Jersey, where I think it's a little bit easier road. New Jersey is pretty much solidly a blue state in my view. What do you think about what's going on there?
Yeah, you know, New Jersey is another race we're paying very close attention to. And like you said, it is pretty reliably blue at the federal level, but the governor's races tend to be much more competitive. So we are not taking anything for granted. In fact, precedent would say we should lose this race just because a single party, we're trying to make history. We would be winning three governor's races in a row for the first time in 60 years. So we are very much gearing up for a competitive race. A group that we are backing announced spending a reservation of millions of dollars today. And we, again, another state where we have a very strong nominee in Mikey Sherrill, who is a great member of Congress, a former Navy helicopter pilot. And she is traveling the state talking about her plans to make New Jersey more affordable. And again, the contrast is with Jack Cittarelli. He's already lost twice. We're going to make him a three-time loser. He said that his priority would be with this bill. He said if he was governor, he'd be phone banking all of the delegation, telling them to back it, and shame on any Republican who doesn't support it. Shame on the people who support these cuts to Medicaid. Yeah.
No, shame on them. And look, the reality is, as I said a moment ago, this is an opportunity for Democrats to put this around Republicans' neck and make them answer the question every single day about the cuts that are going to happen to Medicaid, the SNAP cuts that are happening, the school lunch programs that are under attack, all of this stuff that my Christian nation friends, you would think would be in favor of. But oddly enough, you know, feeding people and taking care of people and especially the elderly, not so much on their agenda when it comes to budgeting.
Yeah, this bill, to your point, it cuts Medicaid, it cuts SNAP, it raises costs, it hurts jobs. And I just want to zero in on one thing you mentioned earlier, and I want to go back to it. The impact on rural hospitals and rural healthcare clinics. A lot of people who, you know, those hospitals and healthcare clinics are already hurting. A lot of people who go there rely on Medicaid. When they lose their health insurance, these hospitals are going to close. A lot of them are under threat already around the country, and that means that people are going to lose jobs. They're a huge economic driver in rural communities. Doctors and nurses might pack up their bags and go somewhere else. And then people are going to have to drive hours to get care, or drive their parents or grandparents to get care, or drive their kids to get care, or even worse, not get it at all. No. So this bill is going to hammer small towns and small businesses in these rural hospitals.
No, and look, you know, in most small rural communities, the hospital is the center of employment, not just the center of care. And for those of us who have great health care, and look, I say all the time, I've got incredible health insurance. My union does a great job ensuring that I get that. If there's no hospital in my rural community, what good's having great health insurance if you can't get any care? So the question that comes to you as comms director of the Democratic Governors Association, how are governors going to use this in the campaigns to make people aware? This is an opportunity for Democrats to pound the drum of, hey, we're the party of the working class. We're the party of people who need help. We're the party of community. How are you going to do that?
Yeah, our Democratic governors, all 23 of them, have been out there sounding the alarm about this bill. They all signed a joint letter talking about how it's not just some kind of cost shift like the Republicans are trying to spin it. This is going to be impossible for these state budgets to make up, and people are going to lose health insurance, not get the care they need. Kids are going to go hungry. Jobs are going to go away. And so they're going to be out there every single day talking about the negative impacts this is going to have on working families. And also, just as important, Democratic governors and our candidates need to outline a positive vision, and they're doing this, and a positive vision to lift people up and help folks get the chance to work hard and get ahead and lower costs. We know affordability is a really big issue right now. Our chair, the Democratic governor of Deep Red, Kansas, Laura Kelly, she won in 2022 by running on her plan and keeping her promise to axe the food tax, which is making groceries cheaper in Kansas and saving the average Kansas family hundreds of dollars every single year. Governor Whitmer in Michigan is another great example. She ran on repealing the retirement tax and fixing the roads and making life better for working families. And where you are, I know you said you're just outside of Harrisburg. Governor Shapiro has done a great job of being Pennsylvania's get stuff done governor, showing that he can fix I-95 real quick. He can create more job opportunities, fund education, and create a bunch of jobs. So Democratic governors are going to be holding these Republicans accountable, but they're also going to be talking about what they're doing to actually get things done that make life better for working people every single day.
No, and that's the important part, that second part. Look, I expect Democratic governors to get stuff done. My problem is you know, like a lot of my labor friends, they get stuff done. They just never talk about it. They just never promote the fact that they're doing good things. It's one of the things I like about Shapiro. Yeah, he fixed that. I got that I-95 bridge done fairly quick. But the fact that there was the transparency of constantly being able to see what's going on and promoting the fact that, hey, look at what we're doing. I think Democrats got to do a better job of not just promote, not just having good policy, but promoting it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think another great example of this is Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear. This is someone who's won 3 statewide elections in Deep Red, Kentucky, that Trump consistently wins by 20, 25, 30 points. He's constantly traveling Kentucky, talking about the new jobs that he's creating, talking about how his policies are making a positive impact on people's lives. And I really think when people think about the path forward for Democrats, look to Democratic governors. I mentioned we have 23 of them. They represent a majority of the U.S. population, including 5 out of 7 of the swing states from 2024, and deep red states like Kansas and Kentucky. And they've shown that they can build a coalition across party lines. They can earn trust from working class voters by actually delivering policies that make their life better. And then they're out there on the ground in communities talking about it every single day. And, you know, going back to Democratic governors being able to win 2024, do not want to brush it off. Not a great year for Democrats across the map. We had a huge win in North Carolina with Governor Josh Stein winning a state that's really tough to win. And he won by double digits by talking about his plan to cut taxes for the middle class and to keep people safe. And
yeah, but also let's not play down the fact that his opponent was what he was.
Oh yeah, but I will say people forget Mark Robinson was very extreme. People don't forget that. The Republican Governors Association spent over $20 million in that race. So they were throwing everything they had at that race, and he still won big.
So I guess the last line of questioning I've got for you, because coming out of this bill is a lot of bad for states. know, this the attacks on Medicaid, especially. As I understand it, virtually every blue state governor has expanded Medicaid. If these cuts happen, is this the end of the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare? And then how are you going to use that campaign-wise to get rural voters, especially people in my community who voted for Trump, thinking, hey, he was going to make their lives better. He was going to bring utopia back. How are you going to use that?
Yeah, well, you know, I certainly hope this doesn't mean the end of the Affordable Care Act, but it is in many ways them doing what they tried to do in Trump's first term of cutting health care and then using that to give huge tax breaks to the rich again. That's exactly what they're doing here. So we know millions of Americans are going to lose their health care. I think to your point about rural communities, we're going to talk a lot about rural hospitals and rural health care clinics and what that means to those communities in terms of people being able to get their care and be able to get jobs. We're going to be talking about what governors can actually do to lower costs. A lot of our Democratic governors have taken direct action and signed legislation to lower the cost of prescription drugs. Many Democratic governors, including as one great example, Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs, canceled medical debt, canceled $2 billion of medical debt for people who, you know, shouldn't go bankrupt just because they got sick. And so we're going to be talking about healthcare. We're going to be talking about jobs, education, really those everyday issues that people think about and are impacting them every single day that we are making their life better and Republicans are making it worse.
Yeah, and that's a gift for this next election cycle because there's now no denying what Republicans have done. They can't run from this. They are going to be the party of hospital closures. And every time there is a closure, it should be a big freaking deal. This should be Trump closed another hospital, much like they did with the ACA. Oddly enough, people are kind of coming around to the ACA when they realize, hey, I can get health insurance and I'm not going to go broke if I get sick. Wow. Imagine that.
Yeah. And the last time this came up in Trump's first term, and we are in no way counting on any kind of blue wave. The stakes are so high. We cannot take anything for granted. We need to work incredibly hard. But the last time that they tried to cut healthcare in 2017 in Donald Trump's first term, over the next 3 years, the DGA went on to flip 9 states from red to blue. You can see the maps behind me. We have a huge amount of governor's races over the next 2 years. And all of these issues we're talking about, healthcare, education, jobs, are going to be on the ballot. And it is more important than ever that we elect Democratic governors who are going to deliver for working families.
There you go. Sam, I appreciate you taking a little time. I hope you'll come back as these races heat up and keep us up to date. What's going on?
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Sam Newton, comms director there with the Democratic Governors Association. Make sure you check out their website, democraticgovernors.org. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you excited about this coming election cycle? If you're in a blue state, are you worried about the fact that Medicaid could potentially bring down the ACA? I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1894. That was the day that labor leader Eugene V. Debs was arrested for supporting the strike of Pullman Palace Car Company workers. In May, the workers who made the popular train sleeping cars had walked off the job. George Pullman had slashed the workers' wages but kept the rents in his company town steady. The striking workers called on Eugene Debs to support their strike. Debs had made a name for himself in the labor movement by successfully founding the American Railway Union. The union joined together railroad workers in an unprecedented force of solidarity across job types. In June, the union voted to boycott Pullman in support of the train car makers. As rail traffic ground to a halt, the federal government moved in to end the strike. Federal troops were called out. A federal court issued an injunction against Debs and the boycott. The basis for Debs' arrest was the claim that the boycott interfered with the delivery of the U.S. mail by the trains. Debs served a 6-month jail sentence in Woodstock, Illinois. His case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which decided in favor of the injunctions. When Debs was released from prison, he delivered a speech he called Liberty. In it, he declared, quote, The people have seen the money power practicing at every art of duplicity, growing more arrogant and despotic as it robbed one and crushed another, building its fortification of the bones of its victims and its palaces out of the profits of its piracies. The Pullman strike and the American Railway Union were crushed, and injunctions became a powerful tool against the labor movement.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Well, something terrifying is happening in the country, and look, none of this is surprising. No shocks here. And this is the part that gets me. We've been talking about what's coming for quite some time. We went through a campaign where, you know, they basically told it, they wrote it down. They put it into Project 2025, and we all knew. But here's the thing, you know, something terrifying is happening in this country. And if you, like me, are in the working class, you know, it's always the little guy who pays the price when our rich and powerful decide to flex their muscle. And now you've got Donald Trump and his Department of Homeland Security going after Harvard. And you may go, yeah, screw down, you have the charm. What they're doing is they're demanding mountains of documents about international students. They're threatening to rip away the university's ability to enroll foreign students. And they've made it clear that no one, no matter how rich or prestigious, no one's safe. No one's safe from their wrath. If you dare step out of line, you dare appear to not be loyal enough. And the thing is, if they can do this to Harvard, what's stopping them from coming after you or me or your union or your local school or your local anything, your job? And don't kid yourself saying, well, you know, it's about security. It's about law enforcement. It's not about security or law enforcement at all. It's about power, raw, unchecked, pure, unadulterated power, vengeful power. Now, Trump and his administration are claiming that Harvard lets foreign students abuse their visa privileges and advocate for violence and terrorism. And like most of the claims that they've made, no evidence, nothing on the table, just sweeping accusations and big threats. So now they're demanding Harvard hand over basically everything, emails, memos, footage of students protesting. And again, this is all about making an example out of Harvard, sending that message to all of the other universities, all of the other institutions. You either fall in line or else. And or else is the big part. And why is it happening? Well, my theory is that Trump and his cronies clearly want to scare the elite. Absolutely, sure. But I think it's more than that. They want to show the rest of us that nobody's safe from them. Nobody is safe from them, not even the Harvard elites. They want to distract working people from what the real issues are, like what we've been talking about, these massive cuts to Medicaid that are going to end up closing rural hospitals and doing irreparable harm to working families just so they can have tax breaks for billionaires. And how are they covering it up? Well, by picking a fight with a liberal elite. We'll show them. And the reality is what this is, it's classic divide and conquer. While we're busy watching and some people cheering Trump and his government allies bullying Harvard, they're out there gutting our health care. They're slashing social programs, making it easier for the Bezoses and the Musks and the wealth class of this country to get richer at your expense. But the reality is this should keep you up at night. Because if they can threaten Harvard's accreditation, ban international students, and demand private records just because we don't like what you're doing, we don't like how you're running your campus. Again, what stops them from coming after you? Me, any of us. So if you have the audacity, if you have the gall to protest at work, let's say, If your union stands up to a bad boss, if your local school board refuses to toe the Trump line, what stops the government from using the same tactics to go after you? Today it's Harvard, tomorrow it's your kid's teacher, your neighbor's small business, you. This is dangerous for every one of us, not just the so-called elite. When we allow a government to start picking on enemies, when we allow a fascistic government to use the full force of the awesome power of the federal government to punish people, we know it's the working class who ends up getting screwed. Fewer rights, less security, more fear. Yeah, we've seen it before. What we're going to see more of is union busting, blacklists, loyalty oaths. Already talked about that. And now it's subpoenas, threats, and public shaming. So we should all be afraid. Because the reality is what we're seeing is we're seeing Donald Trump running this country like he ran every failed business. Straight into the ground. And again, the only people who are going to pay for it are people like you and me. And you look at this one big, beautiful nightmare bill. Nothing but a rich people get rich quick scheme for billionaires. But it's a death sentence for working people, for a social safety net that millions of us depend on. We've talked about this. You want to know what desperation looks like? Well, it's coming. Just wait a few minutes. The full impact of these cuts are on the way. And it's exactly what Trump and his cronies want. Mass desperation. A nation of people so beaten down and broken that we'll sell off everything just to survive. Call it what it is. This bill is about economic sabotage. It's not about growing the economy. They don't even pretend with that. This bill, as we've talked about, slashes Medicaid, takes food out of the mouths of children, and shreds support for working people in the working class. While again, massive tax handouts for the very wealthy. And the thing is as they drain our government's coffers, as they create this desperation, as our deficits go through the roof, you go, oh, well, you know, that oops, it's not just a bug in the system. It is the system. It's the plan. Run up deficits while cutting taxes for the rich, then turn around and say, sorry, we're broke. Guess we'll have to cut everything else. Got to kill it to save it. It's the same scam that Trump ran, you know, with his failed casinos, his failed airline, and his other failed businesses, all bankrupt. Loaded up with debt, loot the place, and everyone else, they get to hold the bag, us. That's the end game here. Once the government's too broke to function, the wealthy are going to come in, they're going to buy up our national assets for pennies on the dollar, public lands, utilities, infrastructure, schools, hospitals, you name it. Nothing is safe from the fire sale. Again, we've seen this before. Every time Wall Street crashes our economy, what happens? They get bailed out, and then they go and they buy up Main Street. And the rest of us are the ones who are out of work and out of luck. Now they're doing it on a national scale. And Trump, Trump is their front man. Trump's their con man. Don't let them fool you. It's not about waste, fraud, and abuse. It's not about being more efficient. The only abuse here is what's happening to working families across this country. And they know it. They know that they can run up the deficits. They know they can run up massive debt. All while keeping all of the wonderful things for our wealth class. Because eventually someone's got to buy it, right? Literally, they're taking from the poor, giving to the rich so that the rich can then go and buy all of the things that the poor need, like Social Security, Medicare, you name it. They're coming for it. This is class warfare, plain and simple. And as Warren Buffett said, it's class warfare and my class is winning, but they shouldn't be. The rest of us should be demanding better health care, better opportunities to put food on our table, more dignity, a better future. Trump's not making America great again. He's making it a playground for the wealthy and a wasteland for the rest of us. And the reality is what I've been saying. The solutions to our problems will come from the suffering caused by their savagery. This bill is savagery. This bill is going to harm working people. It's going to harm you and me. Even if we're not right now on Medicaid, right now getting food stamps, they're coming. Are you surprised? No, you shouldn't be. Better not be. Better be preparing for it. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Am I off base? Or, yeah, do you see this is how conservatives run government? Straight into the ground. Want to hear your thoughts? rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A federal judge in New Hampshire issues a nationwide block against a White House plan to end birthright citizenship. The U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled that federal judges cannot issue nationwide orders unless they involve a class action lawsuit. And CBS's Scott McFarlane reports.
As soon as that Supreme Court ruling came down, a group of attorneys got together, filed a class action suit to stop this birthright citizenship attempt. And a judge in New Hampshire says this accords with the Supreme Court ruling and he will halt it for a week, but the battle continues.
Palestinian activist Mahmoud Khalil, who spent more than 3 months in ICE detention for his role in campus protests against Israel, is seeking $20 million in damages from the Trump administration. He says in audio